The NASDAQ composite hits 5,000. So what? From APM in Washington, I'm David Gura in for David Brancaccia with the Marketplace Midday Update. Yesterday, for the first time in 15 years, the NASDAQ composite closed above 5,000, at 5,008.1. Here with us to talk about the significance of the NASDAQ 5,000 milestone is Julie Nieman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company. Hi there, Julie.
Morning, David.
So how different is the NASDAQ today versus what the NASDAQ was back in 2000?
15 short years ago, what you had was a dot-comedy fashion that was going on that was totally insane. Anything that had .com to its name, people were buying it like crazy. People were buying internet stocks on charge cards, taking out home equity loans on their houses to buy internet stocks. These were all companies that were all P, no E, all price, no earnings. It was a period of tremendous productivity, but there was a period of huge speculation as well.
The bubble burst. Are we at risk of something like that happening again, do you think?
Just 15 short years, everybody thinks we're back in a bubble again. There are sectors in the market where there is a bubble, you know, specifically in the biotechnology area. There's more hope than there is reality for a lot of these particular stocks. And that's what always drives speculation, hope rather than reality. So we're going to see a lot of rotation in the market simply as certain sectors do get overpriced. But this is not a case of where the whole market is in a bubble situation here. The S&P 500 finally got back to break even after 13 years. So getting back to where we were just talks about years of dead money, not going back into a bubble era.
Julie Nieman with Smith Moore & Company. Julie, thanks very much as always.
You bet.
Some news from automakers this morning. General Motors says sales were up last month in the U.S. by 4.2%. That is less than analysts expected. And Ford says sales of light vehicles fell by 2%. And those companies are placing some of the blame for that on cold weather across the country. Customers have stayed away from showrooms. Apple debuted Apple Pay a few months ago, and now Samsung is amping up its mobile payment system. The company just unveiled its Galaxy S6 smartphones, and Samsung says it'll be possible to pay with your phone almost anywhere credit cards are accepted, something that the iPhone cannot do. Marketplace's Nova Safo reports.
Say you're at the grocery store, and oops, you've forgotten your wallet. No problem. You may be able to use your smartphone, tap it against a special device at the cash register, and pay your bill. That is, if there is such a device. Very few retailers actually have them.
Right now, you know, we're in that chicken and egg.
James Wester is a global payments analyst at IDC.
Nobody really wants to tap to pay because there aren't any terminals, and nobody's buying terminals because nobody's asking to tap to pay.
So what's lost in the interim? A cut of the more than $30 billion in credit card transaction fees. And while companies like Apple wait it out, Samsung is skipping the chicken and the egg. Tim Sloan is a payments analyst at Mercator Advisory Group.
They've implemented a technology that radiates magnetic energy from your phone directly into the existing terminals.
So those millions of existing credit card terminals think a Samsung phone is just another card. Sloan says that could give Samsung an advantage for several years to come. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
The placebo effect has always been a bit of a mystery. You give patients a pill filled with sugar, you tell them it's medicine, and some of the patients will say that they feel better. Now, a recent study of Parkinson's patients suggests you can boost the effects of a placebo even further by telling patients a drug is expensive. Gretchen Kuda-Crohn reports on the unusual role cost plays in medicine.
Alberto Espe and his colleagues at the University of Cincinnati gave a group of patients with Parkinson's disease injections of saline, but told them they were testing two new drugs, one that cost $100 and another that cost 15 times as much.
When they received the cheap formulation, they got better, but nowhere near those who received the expensive medication.
In fact, the people who thought they were getting the expensive drug did almost as well as when they were on a real drug. What the patients experienced was real, but it was entirely due to the placebo effect. Espe believes that cost affects the placebo because so many of us believe that expensive things are better.
We feel the more we pay, perhaps the more value we're getting. And of course, that isn't true.
Unless we believe it is, says George Newman. Newman studies consumer behavior at the Yale School of Management, and his research shows that the pleasure we get from objects is determined by what we believe about them. For example, if we believe we're drinking a $200 bottle of wine, it tastes better, and the regions of the brain devoted to pleasure light up more brightly than if we think it's a bottle of Tubac Chuck.
What we're believing about the world, what we're imagining about the world, you know, directly influences, you know, how we experience things, even very tangible things like the effectiveness of medication.
In this case, cost creates a bias in patients' expectations, says Ted Kapchuk, director of the program in placebo studies at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
But it's a bias that we want to utilize, we want to maximize, we want to optimize in clinical practice.
But before drug manufacturers start raising prices in the name of science, Kapchuk says there are plenty of ethical ways to raise patient expectations, and most of them, like improvements in listening and attentiveness by physicians, are free. I'm Gretchen Kuda-Crowen for Marketplace.
Finally, a new version of Saturday Night Live is coming to Chinese television. Producers say they're recruiting comedians there to do sketch comedy. As for whether or not we'll hear a Chinese Don Pardo say live from Beijing at Saturday night, it is still unclear whether or not the show will actually be live. I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.